3172. SMS Refilwe on 31702.
Absolutely. Do give me a shout and weigh in on the conversation. So this morning, we're asking the question, does weight determine your health? Or rather, does your physique determine your health as well? Oftentimes, we step on that scale, we see that number, and we immediately assume that it is linked quite directly to our health. Yes, body weight is strongly correlated with the risk of various diseases, such as heart disease, stroke, cancer, and diabetes. But the assumption that your health is always determined by your weight, I think, is ill-founded. But to explore this further with us, we've got Danielle Fenter, who is a registered dietitian at the Sharks Rugby Medical Center. Danielle, thank you so much for your time this morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Yes, good morning. Nice to be here.
Danielle, you know, we live in a time and in a society that is obsessed with various body shapes or certain types of body shapes, right? And I think there's been a metamorphosis and a change over the years where skinny used to be the ultimate beauty standard if you go by women's magazines and fashion magazines. Yes. And now it's big, it's big butts, thick thighs, tiny, yeah, tiny waist, etc. And sure, if you basically live your life according to what the magazines and social media or popular culture says, you might go crazy. But let's talk about weight and what the things we assume, the assumptions we assume around the size of one's body. Can you be healthy at any body size?
Look, I think that you can. I mean, the World Health Organization uses BMI. You know, if you're under 18, you're underweight, and if you're over 24.9, you're kind of overweight. But I don't really think that that's accurate, because I think if someone is overweight, but they're carrying the fat distribution, let's say, on their hips instead of their stomach, mm-hmm, and they're free from disease, then actually they are healthy, because I don't think that the risk of disease is directly linked to weight, even though there are a lot of studies that show if you are overweight, you're going to increase your risk of those lifestyle diseases like diabetes and heart disease and cancer. But if your fat is distributed well, like let's say for women, mm-hmm, if it's on your hips instead of your waist, then actually you're fine. And for men, there are a lot of men, especially sportsmen, that carry a lot of muscle, and muscle very dense. And the BMI doesn't take that into account.
Yes.
So they might actually be obese, but actually they're just over muscular. And that's also quite healthy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You made a distinction of carrying, you spoke about weight distribution and carrying weight or fat around your waist or around your waist or hips versus your stomach. What's the difference? What's going on, or why is it an alarm, a red flag when there's a muscle, rather a fat being carried around the stomach?
Well, when your fat's carried around your stomach, we actually call it visceral fat, which means you've got a lot of fat around your organs, and then that directly increases your risk of especially heart disease. Also, fat around your kidneys is not very healthy for your kidneys. So that's really where a lot of the problems arise, things like hypertension as well. But where we distribute fat is also a genetic link.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't have much control around that.
No.
Let's talk about the concept of being skinny fat.
Yes, skinny fat. I see quite a few of those people. You get these incredibly, let's say, a lot of them are actually fairly tall, mm-hmm, tall, and they're very skinny, but they absolutely have no muscle. I mean, I've got the scale in my practice, and it measures your fat percentage. So you can have someone who's absolutely lean-looking, but when they stand on the scale, their, yeah, body fat is like 35%, you know. Mm-hmm. So in fact, you would, if you had to close your eyes, you would think this person is obese, but they are skinny fat. And I purely think that that is, it could be due to bad diet, but it also is definitely due to genetics.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And what,
these are the people that usually have heart attacks, and you think, gosh, how did they have a heart attack? Mm. Because actually they're so slim.
Yeah.
But I see that a lot in the hospital I work in as well.
Yeah. And what's that due to? You say it might be genetics. Is it a diet that consists primarily of junk food? I mean, I'm just thinking of a former way back at Varsity, thinking of a former colleague in the bookstore I worked with, and she was a skinny, really really pretty young thing, but ate nothing but junk food, never drank water. And I remember having this odd conversation where we definitely shared way too much that day, but she told me that she only passed stool twice a week. And that was my first introduction to skinny fat, or skinny and incredibly bizarrely unhealthy. But what might be the reasons for being skinny fat? And what's also going on in the body when someone appears skinny but actually has such an unhealthy lifestyle?
Yeah, well, you probably find that even though they're choosing healthy foods, and that is genetics cause you to choose healthy food. I mean, obviously you can have an environment, maybe nothing else is available, maybe you work in a place where you have to get a takeaway, and the motivation to cook yourself healthy food is low, so that's also genetics. But I think with someone like that, they might have a very high metabolism. So their genetics would dictate their metabolism. So even though they're eating really badly, they're actually burning the calories really quickly. And you might actually find that that person doesn't eat a lot. So you might find a girl in your class, let's say, that always brings a chocolate in her lunchbox, and she eats a chocolate, but that's all she eats. So she's eating badly, but she's also not actually eating that much. So her appetites are small, but she's just putting the wrong things in your body. And definitely a lot of that is contributed to genetics. So maybe she's distributing her fat also everywhere. You know, you do get those people who gain weight, and they gain weight from their ankles to their head, you know, and other people, when they gain weight, it's, you know, all around their stomach. And then how you burn calories, your behavior around food, the foods that you choose, your appetite, your sense of fullness, all of that is dictated by your genetics.
What I'm curious about is, quite often when you read, literature, and not scientific or medical, but, you know, in magazines or even online, you're either talking diet and fitness, losing weight, gaining muscle, etc., you quite often will come across charts that will give you a sort of variety of female, even male body shapes as well. And somehow will prescribe that this is the type of exercise that will be best suited for your specific goals, because you're pear-shaped or because you've got an apple-shaped body, etc. Do body shapes have any bearing on how one should exercise and how one should eat for optimal health?
No, I think those stories always make me laugh. I don't think everyone who's a pear shape should do the same type of exercise. But saying that, they say that pear shape is, if you want to choose to be healthy, you would, as a female, you'll choose to be a pear shape. A lot of females don't want to be a pear, but that is actually healthier than being an apple shape, for example.
Yeah.
But, again, it does turn towards genetics, about how exercise affects your body, or how you respond to exercise. So some people will definitely respond better to, let's say, a power-based exercise, which would be high intensity, and other people respond better to more endurance. So for some, it's actually really better just to go for a nice 3-kilometer, 5-kilometer walk. And that's enough for you to burn calories. And other people, their genetics are so sluggish that they need to actually do a really high intensity of exercise to actually get their bodies to burn those calories. So I don't think it's really shape. You know, no amount of leg raises to the side is ever going to decrease the fat on your thighs, for example. You may become stronger and put more muscle there, in which case technically your legs should get bigger. But how you burn calories is definitely due to your genetics and how many, they call it MET hours or METCON hours, how many hours you need at a specific intensity to get your body to function or burn those calories properly.
Mm. So you've disabused us of a few notions around waist, around weight, around shape of one's body. When we also then talk dieting or diet and food for optimal health or perhaps even weight loss, another thing we come across quite often online is the concept of DNA testing for weight loss, or DNA testing for to find out which diet is best suited for your health goals. Is that another myth that we need to bust this morning?
I must say, I use DNA testing in my practice, and I love it.
Okay, so what are you looking for as you test?
So the test, I use the 3x4 genetics test. I mean, there's quite a few out there in South Africa. They all test exactly the same genes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just the reporting structure is different, because obviously they're all trying to compete for attention. But they will test a lot in terms of health, like inflammation, how you detoxify food, what your heart health might look like. They're not diagnostic. They're never going to tell anyone, oh my goodness, you have diabetes or you're going to have diabetes. It's just an indicator of your risk, as in, you know what, you actually are high risk to have diabetes if you do the following things.
Mm-hmm.
So it is quite useful to kind of show you your own little red flags. But in terms of weights, it'll tell us how you cope with appetite. Are you always someone who seeks for food, or is it actually not that important? Because sometimes it could just be appetite, where someone's eating too much and they're not even really aware. So you can teach someone more behavioral issues around food.
Okay.
It'll also tell you things like metabolism. So do you have a slow metabolism? Do you have a fast metabolism? And what can you do to increase your metabolism? I mean, a good one is always eating more fiber and doing a little bit more high intensity training. And then, interestingly, it'll tell you, how do you burn fat?
Mm-hmm.
Is it difficult for you to burn fat in the presence of carbohydrates? Is it difficult for you to burn fat in the presence of fat? And I know for myself, the Mediterranean diet is incredibly healthy. It's a real go-to diet. But my genetics tell me that actually a Mediterranean diet is not that good for me in terms of weight. And I do know, if I lean towards, let's say, a lot of avocado, a lot of nuts, a lot of seeds, like
yes,
that type of good fats, I start to feel not that great, you know, like a bit sick.
Mm.
So it's definitely quite a thing. I can have a more balanced diet, definitely suits me better. So it will guide someone into, you know what, actually, you can eat fat and burn fat, and you should stay away from carbs. And maybe the keto is better for someone, like say, all Mediterranean, all balanced, all fasting even. So that's also quite interesting. And the last thing it might tell us is the resistance to weight loss. Like, is it actually easy to lose weight? Because some people can try everything under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And their genetics are just literally accounting for 80% of their weight loss. So some people might have a 25% predisposition to being overweight, whereas others, their genetics are dictating 80%. So sometimes, no matter what you do, it's very difficult to lose weight.
Yeah.
But then you'll always find out a why. What is that thing? Could it be sleep even? Is it that you've got the clock gene that's, you know, your circadian rhythms are all out?
Mm-hmm.
So then it helps guide you in what you can do to try and, you know, shift that weight or improve your lifestyle. So it is, I mean, it is fascinating, right? It's your DNA.
Interesting stuff. Let's focus on women who use contraceptives, and some forms of contraceptives tend to make women gain weight. What is going on there physiologically? Why does that happen? But I guess most importantly, what can women do to counteract this?
I must say, I've actually just changed to a different contraception, and I was petrified to take it. I thought, oh, I hope I don't gain weight.
Yeah.
Because it's normally like 3 to 5 kilos. That's what everyone says. But I think as well, you are putting in fake hormones into your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes the disruption of hormones can increase your body weight. You are putting a drug into your body, and some people, and I'm going to go back to genes, some people, again, genetically cannot detoxify medications properly, and therefore they've got to store toxins in fat. And if your fat cells are full, you've got to make more fat cells. So it could be that. And then you've often got to look at other stuff as well. Are they on any other medication? So, for example, in someone with mental health issues, are they on antidepressants, which can increase your appetite? Or, you know, sometimes the medication can decrease motivation or make you feel tired. Then you're not going to cook and you're going to go get takeout. Cortisone is another one that can make you gain literally 6 to 8 kilos in a week. A month.
In a month.
So I think it's just how people respond to different medications.
Sure. Okay. So how you respond to different medications, how then do you, is there anything that's to be done? As you're saying, so many certain people may not detoxify certain medications or contraceptives as well as others. What's to be done, if anything?
Well, I mean, I think if someone's on a medication that's making them gain weight, it's always better to go back to your doctor and discuss it with them, because there's always other alternatives. Okay. If it's a detox issue, you know, then you've really just got to look after your liver. So then I'll tell people to eat a lot of veggies, sort of a lot of spinach, a lot of raw broccoli, cabbage, like that type of thing. So really just change their diet to a diet that supports the liver. And that often works very well.
Okay. Fascinating stuff. Danielle, we're going to have to leave it right there. But we've busted a few myths. We've gained some insights into the usefulness of DNA testing and other things. Really appreciate your time this morning. Yes. And, of course, lending us your expertise.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Danielle Fenter is a registered dietitian at the Sharks Rugby Medical Center.